listening to The Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three relatively grown men binge the iconic HBO series Sex and the City. So dust off those DVDs and grab yourself a white wine or even a cosmopolitan and settle in. Take it away, boys.
Welcome to the Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three guys are watching And Just Like That. And Just Like That, I'm Corey Cavan.
I'm Kevin James Doyle.
My name is John Sieber. And
here
we are.
Episode 4. We are back. Mm-hmm. Listen, Sex in the City. We came in hot. A lot of people have jumped off the train. We're still cooking. This podcast is never ending. Doesn't matter what happens.
Yeah. Well, there's some things that could end it.
Like what? Like what could end it? Like a terrorist attack on New York City? Oh, you're talking about our podcast? You're talking about the show?
No, a terrorist attack wouldn't stop the podcast. I'm talking about the podcast.
Are you kidding? We've potted through many terrorist attacks.
That's true. That is true.
I mean, not on us, but they happen all the time.
Not on us or our country, but terrorist attacks are happening every day.
That is grim. That is. We can make it through terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we could.
Yeah, no, Sex and the City week burned bright in New York City, and then it it supernova'd and died out like a hot star real fast.
Listen, this is what this podcast has had is the past 4 years consistency. A lot of people came in hot. They're like, "Whoa, Sex in the City," you know, and everyone was all pumped, and the brakes have got put on, but the boys are still cooking forward. I will say this because so many people have asked. We decided not to say anything about last podcast is like what we're going to say. I didn't want to say this on the podcast, because I think it would be wrong to put it out there. But I was going to say, 100%, I think there will be more Chris Noth accusers. Yeah. And there's two more since we did the last podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very unfortunate. And I there could be more, but it seems like a sad pattern that is going to change the perspective on Mr. Big from henceforth. A lot of people dancing... saying told you so about Mr. Big, but just so everybody realizes, it's a fucking character and a real human being with real human being accusers. So
I think like what is I gotta choose my words carefully here. I think what is incredibly sad is the lives that were affected and ruined by his decisions. I think something else that's also really heartbreaking is that there's a possibility that Sex and the City as a franchise or as a show about strong, dynamic, powerful women who have interesting lives and friendships apart from men could potentially be tarnished by the decisions of said shitty men. And that's a huge bummer for me, that like the focus is being pulled away from how badass this show is and how empowering it is and amazing it is. And was for women to this friggin' shithead. So it sucks.
Yeah. You know, also what's just crazy, because I got on and the amount of, we were texting one of our friends who's been on the podcast before on Ahita about it. But, When you look at the Instagram comments and when people were reaching out, they're like, what, where do you stand? Like, what, do you have anything to say? I'm like, cool.
We're anti-sexual assault.
I
think that's what we would have to say.
And it's like, I have zero connection to this fucking person. Like I, you know what I mean? Like besides the podcast, but I guess that's like where you end up. But,
right.
But the amount of, when Sarah Jessica Parker, Cynthia Nixon and Kristen Davis all put their statement out about it.
Right,
I'm telling you what, the comments below are baffling to me, because it was like 50-50. There were people that were just like, how could you turn your back on him? Like, you're bad friends. And like, just like trashing all of the accusers. And it was fascinating to read on the, I'm sure some of our listeners may, I mean, because they're Sex and the City fans, may feel that way. But I find it kind of weird whenever, like, people, when people are shocked that anyone does something wrong. Mm-hmm. John and I are reading Dostoevsky right now, so I feel like that's going to put us in a zone of just being like, the depths of human depravity are endless,
I couldn't believe that people were anti-Bernie Madoff. I was rooting him on the entire time, Ponzi scheme through Ponzi scheme. When he got locked up, my jaw hit the floor. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I was a Bernie bro, not that Bernie, Madoff.
You're a Bernie bro and a Madoff man. That's who you were.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you know one thing I want to, John, tell me if you vibe with what I'm saying, but one thing that John and I have talked about in private, and then we've talked about on the podcast, but in private, John has basically said, like, one of the things that does not drive you is, like, we're all driven by, like, certain urges, and you said you've, like, you're not driven by sex. That's just not, like...
Yeah, I would say less so than the average person. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't ever recall in like my life that Capote Duncan's motives ever rang like true to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like I never made a decision based on that.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I shouldn't say never, but you know, like that was not when the other bros in the locker room were talking about like that's all they wanted to do. That felt foreign to me a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just know when I was, and I've thought about this with a lot of like Me Too stories, especially ones that like have very two sided, you know, this is me trying to be as charitable to, not charitable to Chris Noth, but it's like charitable to the side of like a drunken hornball, you know, which lots of men can be. I mean, he's drunk, and I know lots of,
right,
and I know I've heard lots of stories of him being drunk around New York City,
right?
And I know whenever I read some of those stories, they become such big cultural touchstones that's like around the world. People, the articles in every language now are like Mr. Big sexual assault,
yeah.
And I think that like when you allow yourself to be fully driven by sexual urges at the expense of like listening to, you know, sex is an intimate thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when it just becomes like, sorry to be vulgar, but it's like, I need to come and I'm horny and I'm rich and there's access to vagina and I'm drunk. So my,
do you remember the sketch on SNL, Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer? Like that is, I need to come. I am horny. Like it is
to vagina.
I know it is caveman like behavior, but
it is.
I mean, that's funny the way it sounds.
It's like once you do that, and then you get to however it's like over the course of 25 years, do that to 1,000 people. It's like not just a numbers game, but it's like it's a thing of like an emotionally bad game where you're just like lots of people. Like, there's just a lot of destruction behind you that you can just, like, live and be like, well, whatever. I don't remember that night.
Yeah.
You know?
I also like thinking about the way media is right now, that someone could clip this out and be like, the Bradshaw boys reveal that over 25 years, 1,000 women fell into the clutches of Christopher Noth. We're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We didn't say that exactly. We did call him a caveman. I agree with you that being driven by that urge. I mean, you see that in, I have not read Dostoevsky, but I think you see that in like a lot of classic literature where it's like people's appetites and vices get in the way of things and affect other people. Absolutely.
Russian literature. Let's talk Lolita, Nabokov.
Yeah. Well, some people say that is American literature because he was Russian-American. So there's a lot of debate about that.
Yeah, I know. That was challenging for me. Not going to lie. If you have read it, shoot us a message. Tell us what you thought. Yeah. The funny story about that, we were reading in our book club, and Katie was at a house. She was working with some little kids at the time. And the mom was like, what are you doing tonight? And she's like, I'm going to a book club. She's like, what are you reading? Thinking it was going to be, you know, like Where the Crawdads Sing.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like... Lolita, and the mom was like, that's really weird. That's
okay.
Odd. But, okay.
All right.
Have a happy holiday.
Well, listen, here's the other thing. Let's just do our Bradshaw Boys clearinghouse up top. The other thing, we got a number of messages about misgendering Che Diaz, and we just want you to know I'm going to do my best. It was like midway through, I always forget. So we're doing
I got you. I saw it happen live and I didn't say anything. I was a bystander who did not stop it. I will stop it.
Well, okay, so I want to, yeah, we did get a couple messages from people, and I went back and listened to the episode. I edited the episode, and then I listened to it. And we had a discussion at the beginning where Kevin had said, I think, you're like, well, Sarah Ramirez, which also, I will say, not only did we misgender, the actor's name is pronounced Sada Ramirez. It's Sada. I listened to an interview with Michael Patrick King, and he constantly refers to Sada Ramirez.
Sada.
So it's Sada. But yeah, we said.
Is that not to make light of the situation, but is that like, you know, I caught gnocchi and Italian people caught gnocchi. And it's just like a different.
Well, so, like, okay, it's interesting.
Is it really Sarah, but she's just, you know, saying gnocchi.
I don't know. I mean, she's half Mexican. She's half Irish.
And I don't mean to make light of the situation.
No, sure. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if, like, I wonder about that. I mean, I have a name that is, I guess, easy to pronounce, Corey. And so I never, like, went through all of elementary school with her being like, it's actually Sada. Mm. But I don't know.
Do they say that, or does just Michael Patrick King say it?
Everyone else on the, it wasn't an interview. It's the Sex and the City Writers podcast. That's what I meant to say. And they all said Sada. Okay.
Like Homer Simpson in the hedge.
Yeah. But there's nothing worse than someone in a, Mexican restaurant in New York City saying, I will have an enchilada. Like, get out of here. I don't care. But that is not what we are saying about Sada Ramirez's name. Mm-hmm. I'm saying people that are trying to be overly culturally sensitive calling enchiladas.
Overly culturally sensitive were Corey and John, because they told me it'd be offensive to call them they Diaz instead of Jay Diaz.
And I want to also point out that the entire point of that conversation was to not have you do what you just did. Like, that is, like, basically being like, yeah, mom and dad said I couldn't take any cookies like this, like how I'm taking cookies and then eating them.
This was literally 3 minutes of Corey and I tiptoeing through a minefield only to have you just come do cartwheels through it.
Yeah, cartwheels through it.
Leroy Jenkins.
1,000%.
Let's do this.
If you've ever wondered what it's like to just
Leroy Jenkins.
Yeah, exactly. Leroy Thankins.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Anyways, bottom line, we had looked up that Sada Ramirez's pronouns were she, they, and in June of this year, they changed them to they, them. Mm-hmm. The character is they, them. One thing I was going to say is that I know some people in my life whose pronouns are he, they, or she, they. I don't know anyone in my life whose pronouns are they, them. And as a grammatical, like a syntax exercise, like, I realized that when we were focusing on it, we got it right. And then when we would go into like a conversation, we would get it wrong when I went back and listen. And that is just a thing that I think I think you said this, Kevin, in some text, you're like, we're like learning and getting used to it and trying our best and obviously getting it wrong because we are like idiots watching the show, which we have said before.
Yeah.
Which doesn't excuse it.
This is actually one of the things when we were done podcasting and it was really fun to make fun of Che Diaz's comedy special, because I think, like, I've seen a bunch of other funny comedians picking on it.
I like to refer to it as Che Diaz's TEDx talk.
TEDx. Yeah, exactly.
It's Che Diaz doing a TED talk,
But I do think one of the cool things, especially like when you're on the internet and conversations like this feel so intense, one of the things I appreciated is like to see like a gender conversation in just like a funny, like, Che Diaz seems like a chill, funny character. And that was the whole point of their special when they were like, you know, talking about like referring to probably like Silence of the Lambs and like all of these different transgender or like weird gendered characters in movies are always like in horror movies or they're sad. And so it was kind of after some of the messages came in and just thinking about like, oh, that is like cool that it was just like a fun, funny stand-up special. I'm sorry, a fun stand-up special. It wasn't funny, but a fun stand-up special that was like a, seems like Che Diaz is like used to people messing this up all the time. And it's just like, please chill out. You're breathing too heavy. Like it's all good, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I want Che Diaz to come on the pod and just be like, it's all good, boys.
I would like, I think Che Diaz.
As long
as
you're trying.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think Che Diaz enjoys people getting worked up about these things so that Che Diaz can say, hey, maybe you should calm down with some weed. Huh?
Yeah.
Why don't you have a toke? You ever tried weed?
They said when they go to the Yankees game, that's their favorite thing to do.
Yeah, their favorite thing is to do is to put on a Yankees cap and watch.
So I'm sure if they listened to the pod and heard us stammering our way through addressing that, they would probably get a kick over it.
I do think as much hell as we've given Che Diaz, I think you're right that Che Diaz would come on the podcast and talk about the issue. And
I also like how we say their entire name every single time. We've never just said Che. It's always been Che Diaz.
Yes, Che Diaz.
Yeah, but this is a podcast about Carrie Preston. And so we're going to be discussing Carrie Preston and Charlotte York Goldenblatt, of course.
One thing that I do want to say before we get off of Che Diaz is that Kevin and I were trying to work out a character called Michael Che Diaz. It's a stand-up character that's a combination of Michael Che and Che Diaz. Michael Che Diaz, like, man, gender is weird. People get real worked up about gender.
I'm not trying to check the box. I'm trying. I don't know what he would say.
I don't know what he's saying.
Wait, can I? I did a show. I've told you guys this, but I did a show with Michael Che when I first started doing stand-up. And I was just trying to play it cool, like in the back of the room talking. And then my mom came up and was like, you were my favorite and my son. And he was like, cool, man. This is your mom. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Also, that was like an East L.A. gangbanger accent for Michael Che. Cool, man. That's your mom. Cool, man. Your mom seems cool.
He just always like his eyes are like closed. He's like, oh, cool.
I guess he has the very chill, cool Michael Che. Yeah, totally.
Dude, him and Hannibal Buress both have that closed-eyed, just kind of like smoke a lot of weed look.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I don't even know if he smokes a lot of weed, but he has that. He has that chill. Vibe.
Yeah.
I need that.
Well, let's watch the episode here. What episode 4?
Episode 4.
What's
called, Some of My Best Friends? Is that the title? The title is Some of My Best Friends.
Sounds like they're going to be dabbling in race.
Let's hop in.
that's going to be like the hat trick of uncomfortable subjects for us. Which is it? Gender, sexual assault. Now we have to do race. Have fun, people.
Welcome to a very special Bradshaw, boys.
Let's go. Oh my gosh. On your hazmat suits and grab the unscrew that canister like we're in The Rock taking out those bulbs.
These subjects will be toxic.
Who best to handle them than three straight white men?
Coming in for a hot take.
All
right,
that's who's handled all these subjects for all of eternity, because they won't hand the mic to anyone else.
Let's give them one more stab.
Just one more stab in 2021. Here they go, the Bradshaw Boys.
Put on your cringe faces and Katie, read the review.
Take it away, Katie.
Hey, all you true crime fans, this is Mike Ferguson.
And this is Mike Morph.
And we'd like to invite you to listen to our podcast, Criminology.
Launched in 2017, we've covered a variety of strange cases from murders to missing persons. Some of the cases are ones you may not have heard of.
Other cases we cover are some of the most historic in true crime. There are 200 episodes of Criminology available to binge on right now. And new episodes come out every Saturday night.
Subscribe to Criminology today, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Episode 4. Some of my best friends. Looking to move forward, Carrie meets with self-made real estate broker Seema Patel. Meanwhile, Charlotte plans a high-stakes dinner party for LTW as Miranda and Naya connect over the frank realities of motherhood. And now, back to the boys.
My dick is upside down. Are we on?
We're on.
Yeah.
You just singing our favorite song?
Dude, George Washington, man. Love that guy. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
It's funny that we're back because Charlotte goes through the Joff debacle.
Yeah.
We just went through that.
The Joff debacle?
Debacle.
With Sarah Sada?
Yeah. So we can relate.
Yeah, we can relate. We
absolutely right.
I've been saying Jeff my whole life. I thought it was. I didn't realize it was Joff.
Also, a big Bradshaw Boys thing with the heavy coffee theme at the beginning. Bradshaw Boys are coffee fans. We've done coffee pods in the past, and we are your classic snobby Brooklyn coffee bros.
We are for sure.
We are insufferable.
That is true. That is true. I will say we are very insufferable. However, anytime anyone's had any coffee that I've made, they've said, this is really good coffee, which only makes me more insufferable.
Corey, you gave, as a baby gift, you gave us like a 30-pound bag of delicious coffee, cold brew.
Yeah.
It was like a really good, thoughtful present, actually. We drank the shit out of that, and it kept us up.
I gave it to you because I knew you were going to need it. Shout out to Mighty Oak Roasters in Queens, New York.
So good.
Wood fire roasted coffee. Some of the best cold brew you'll have in your entire life.
Not even sponsored, but I will.
We're not sponsored.
I will spend 35 minutes just talking about that coffee if given the opportunity.
Some of my best friends drink coffee.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
But I guess we saw everyone's coffee choices here.
Yeah,
Gary is
old school Mr. Coffee.
Mr. Coffee, when that overflowed, she went to the bodega, which, by the way, extremely realistic New York scene in and just like that.
Yeah, bodega.
You get to know your bodega people. You talk about your bodega people.
Yep, that's true.
You, like, they would totally give you one of those, like, pre-wrapped rolls that are sitting out if they knew something bad happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
But she takes it dark and not sweet, or was it dark and sweet?
I think dark, it was dark and not sweet, I think. Which I think just means black coffee. Just
black coffee.
Yeah, yeah. Carrie's really complicated. She can't just call it black coffee.
Charlotte was a non-fat latte?
Non-fat latte. Her and LTW were both LTW non-fat lattes.
Classic non-fat lattes. And what did Miranda have?
What did Miranda have for coffee? She probably had black coffee, but she was afraid to call it black coffee because she was afraid people would think she was talking about race and being confused again.
They cut the scene, but she had Irish coffee. She was just drunk on Bailey's.
Yeah, probably.
That's probably what it was.
That's so funny. But should we go through the breakdown here?
Yeah, let's go through that. Yeah. What's the breakdown?
Great. I'll just read my notes. Everyone loves coffee was my first note. Field trip drama. Charlotte gets completely put on blast by Maureen or some woman who just says she drops balls.
Yeah.
Didn't like that. Carrie says she's going to sell her apartment, and her friends say you should halt, which I've never heard before.
I have heard that before, actually. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. It's a big, like, therapy or addiction thing or whatever.
I've only heard halt in reference to how to stop jerking off, and I'm dead serious.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, that would go to
hungry, angry, what is it?
Lonely or tired.
Lonely, yeah. Tired. And
I mean, I guess that goes towards, like, if it's an addiction.
Dude, like, where'd you get that? Like, Reddit NoFap or something like that?
No, back like Christian youth group type stuff.
Dude, youth group classic.
Dude, how much better would it be to rather than to halt from jerking off is to halt from selling your $50 million apartment? because in like a year, once you processed it, you're still going to want to jerk off at some point. But in the other circumstance, you just close and have $50 million.
What if Carrie said that? She's like, yeah, I know halt. Isn't that when you're thinking about finger blasting yourself, you're just supposed to halt?
You just don't do it.
So then after that, we meet Seema, who comes in strong.
Seema comes in
like
hot.
Comes in like a cowgirl, stomping that cigarette. Mm-hmm. I loved Seema. Mm. Seema is going to sell the apartment, but we need to get rid of some things, maybe bring back a Peloton. And beige up the apartment. And Carrie and Seema start ripping cigs again. There's a little bit of Shay podcast drama. There's the woman who I didn't really catch like what they were trying to accomplish in that scene. Were they trying to suggest that there were the two people in the podcast that were dating and it was like a little lover's quarrel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they were trying to.
Oh yeah. But Bobby Lee's character was dating. Yeah. Bobby Lee's character was dating the social media manager.
And the social media manager, I think, was is a musical theater actress. I think she was in a big show recently, but I'm not sure. That's what Katie said.
Okay.
Then we have Charlotte and Harry trying to form their dinner and thinking about inviting friends outside of their own race and having to go kind of bother the neighbors. Carrie, of course, and Anthony. That comes later. We have a great scene with Nia Wallace and Miranda about IVF. There's a great scene with Carrie in her open house where she meets like kind of the first one-off like creepy male character, very Len Schneider feel.
Oh yeah, definitely like old Len Schneider.
She's standing on like that bear rug and he's like, "You want to go see the bathroom?" And I was like, "There's a little throwback."
The bedroom.
Yeah. Bedroom.
The bedroom, sorry.
You want to watch me take a dump?
Hey, do you want to see how strong my stream is? They say I've got a golden stream like a golden blat.
We have the LTW party, and just like one of my favorite scenes. We'll talk about it. Charlotte just like crushes it in front of the guests. Such a great scene. And then after that, we have Stanford. Saying he's going to Japan, left Carrie a note, going to Japan with one of his TikTok stars, and Anthony announces the divorce. And, of course, that was, I think, the sudden Willie Garson sudden leaving from the show, which was really, really, really sad.
Yeah.
You have LTW and Charlotte becoming besties, and then Carrie and Seema sharing insensitivities about each other. And just like that, we began our real friendship.
Look at that.
Lots of stuff happened this episode.
Lots of stuff happened. I will say I remembered why we didn't see Miranda's coffee, because Miranda is at home and Brady and his girlfriend smell weed smoke on her, and she's I'm not caffeinated for this conversation. So I don't know. I don't remember how she was making coffee.
Yeah, good call.
Well, why don't we start with Miranda's
Brady really get. Brady really giving her the third degree.
Miranda's
storyline was pretty limited to just her and Nia Wallace's conversation where she, I don't know. Yeah.
Let's address the elephant that's been in the room for every episode so far. No one that has worked on this television show has any relation to weed.
That is
the day after
very
you,
true.
The day after you wake up.
That's very true.
Nobody that is not how it works. It's not even like they're just the most, they're owning themselves every time. Where it's like, whoa, smell like, or if they did it, it would be like, is that weed? It wouldn't just be like,
Mom, you reek of weed. And then whoa. Brady is like, brings up the fact that it's legal now. And
yeah,
Miranda's still a square about it. Yeah, you're right. No one, everyone here has a very dare to keep your kids off drugs relationship to weed completely.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't the just a slight smidgen, wouldn't it be like walk in, hey, Mom, how are you?
Right.
is that weed? No. Oh my gosh. I think that's weed. Like, why is that not the scene? It just seems like such a self own to write it like that when that isn't, that's does not happen.
And then they have his girlfriend explain something to her about weed also.
Yeah.
And we also need to talk about the fact that Steve and Miranda have zero boundaries on how to raise their kid with their with the girlfriend living with them. Like, I think his girlfriend is a runaway or something.
Yeah.
She's always there. And I mean, some parents maybe this is what parents do now. They like their kids' boyfriends or girlfriends sleep over. But she's essentially with them all the time, and they clearly don't like it. And now she's kind of sassing them. That, to me, I was like, that girl and Brady suck.
If my son had a girlfriend or boyfriend that came to the home and, like, sassed my wife, Katie, I would put an end to that so fast.
Absolutely.
I know.
I would just be like, nah, you're good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the argument against, like, mega liberal parenting, that it's like, what is your role if they're just like,
Ben Shapiro on the show today.
What?
What's that?
We got Ben Shapiro on the show.
Oh, hang on a second. Hang on.
Trigger warning.
Here's the problem. It's just like,
you have to look. You have to angle your head down and look up when you do it. Here's the problem.
I will own Miranda with facts and with logic. Okay. First of all, no, but it's like, what is your job as a parent if your son can come in and be like, "Hey, I just fucked my girlfriend. Oh, you smell like drugs. Drugs aren't a big deal." It's bad parenting, and I don't necessarily buy that Miranda would be a bad parent.
Yeah.
I agree with you, but this is a TV show, and she needed to have a shitty experience with Brady so she could console Nia Wallace in the restaurant.
That's true.
That's true.
She's in over her head. She's not being a good mom, though.
I will say this.
I agree with you. She's not being a good mom, but I think Nia needed to hear that it can be tough. Although it's tough, it's still worth it, and you should continue to do it.
Yeah, I think what you should do, you don't have to tell your kids not to have sex, but they still need to clean up the room.
Yeah.
You don't want to be stepping on their
condoms. Someone's turned from Ben Shapiro to Jordan Peterson. Make your bed, Brady! Dude, Kevin is coming in hot with all the internet conservative takes today. Hey, listen, Brady needs structure. Brady, if you go back to the old myths of our day, you will find, it's true, you will find in the myths that there is structure and every man needs a quest.
Brady, clean your damn room.
Clean your room.
Brady, just make sure to clean your room. tell the truth and clean your room.
Drugs may be legal, but that does not mean they do not affect you, especially at a younger age like where you at 17.
Have you tried eating nothing but meat, Brady?
Brady should play a contact sport, because a contact sport will socialize him to other men.
Oh, gosh.
I'm crying on the inside. Okay. So let's talk about the Nia Wallace conversation. So they go to a really nice restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Nia messes up the reservation, and the host is not budging. And did they put that in there to have Miranda be confronted with, like, another white savior moment?
I think they put it in there to show Nia Wallace making mistakes too, and trying to. It's like Miranda now knows a little bit, like, I'm not going to try to save her, but showing Nia Wallace being like, I did do this. Like, Nia Wallace but just being a little more like, I'm very confident. And then
Nia Wallace is like, she forgets her ID. She makes reservations for a restaurant in California rather than New York.
I mean, we learned that
I guess it is. It's the IVF.
It's the IVF. It's the IVF defense. It's the IVF defense, you know? It's that's why she killed her husband. It was the IVF. That's what it is. It's the IVF defense.
I think there was a I think there was a clever. These were the best Nia Walla scenes, and these were the best Charlotte scenes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And I totally. Think like they were very obviously written. Now they're written by a black woman, Kelly Goff, but also she was a fan of Sex and the City because I've been a fan of hers, and I looked at her Facebook before we started this, and they seemed to that scene in particular didn't seem like. A trap for Miranda. It just seemed like, yeah, you know, black people, because even the guy, it wasn't a teaching moment because it was like Nia Wallace. And then the guy was, what's it called? The, host was black as well. And I feel like it wasn't, I feel like a few episodes ago, I would have been ready for the cringe moment that it was like just another one of those scenes that was like, hold on a second. And instead it was just like, yeah, this is what it's like to go to the restaurant like anyone else. And it felt like the characters had deeper motivations in this scene. And that's where the IVF thing, I think, was so cool because it created another layer of Nia Wallace. And it didn't just become about one little thing. It became about like what the characters' motivations are, not just like the little wacky things that happen throughout their day. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it did a nice job. Tying it, making it relatable to a younger demographic.
You know,
I think the show is really important because it's talking about women in their 50s and 60s, presumably, living in New York after they've lived a large chunk of their life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tying this thing back in that 20-something-year-olds, 30-something-year-olds who may be experiencing these things can relate to. So I really appreciated that as well because I think if you don't tie in those types of scenarios, then it might feel out of touch a little bit, or not out of touch, but out of place for a younger demographic.
Wait, what's the thing you're saying that they can relate to? The IVF or?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know how many percentage wise, how many 15, 6-year-old women, or birthing people are going through IVF,
right.
But, I think like, you know, a lot of 20 to 30-year-olds are
30s. Yeah. Sure.
And like, there's not many other themes for that age range.
Right. That's
in my opinion.
I mean, there's a ton of talk about weed. Young people love weed, bro.
young people love smoking doobies.
Dude, they love.
Have we had a single orgasm in this show so far?
I've had a ton when I've watched.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, every like three or four each episode. Three, yeah,
Brady and girlfriend.
Yeah, right? Brady and girlfriend. Well, we didn't see it actually happen, but they were on their way, presumably.
Che Diaz, every time they light up their weed.
Every time.
let's talk about Carrie and Seema. I would prefer to save Charlotte for last.
Let's save Charlotte for last. That was really fun
in the show. What are our thoughts on Seema?
One quick Easter egg before Seema got there is when Carrie was waiting for Seema to get there. They show Carrie walking back around the apartment and looking at all the stuff. And the instrumental that was playing is the song Hello, It's Me it's the title of the first episode. And it's the song that played at Big's funeral. So they played a sweet instrumental version of that.
Is that why she started crying?
Probably. I think she started crying from all the letters Peloton has sent the show to be like, can her lawyers talk to you? Let's
First of all, a lot of I haven't heard Bradshaw, like the last name Bradshaw. Everyone's referring to her as Miss Preston, Kelly or Carrie Preston.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I feel like they're laying the groundwork for like a big.
Are we? Like, my question is: Are we now the Preston pals?
Yes.
Oh wow! Yeah.
Moving forward,
we're the Preston pals for sure.
Yeah.
I thought we were the Che Bays.
Yeah, Che Bays.
I think we're the Che Bays.
Che Bays.
Yeah, I think we're the Preston pals. I think that they're definitely gonna bring the name Bradshaw back a lot. They're setting the. I think all these episodes are like very much a like setting the table for like a mid-season thing because even Miranda's thing was like they also didn't hit the drinking hard over the head, but we saw her sitting with like a big glass of Cabernet talking to the phone on Carrie. And so I know we're talking about Carrie, but like I feel like all of these things for some of them are setting the table and they're In that Michael Patrick King interview, he even said, he was like, we want to show Miranda in a place of no control right now because she's always in control. So I think it's like they're trying to set that up for all the characters right now.
So Seema comes in and is her power broker or real estate broker.
Mm-hmm.
She decides to sell the apartment. She needs to remove all her personal artifacts from the apartment and, quote, beige it up.
Yeah. She said, love this, but it's got to go. It's all got to go.
We have about as much experience buying and selling $50 million apartments as we do with race and gender. But
sure.
Do you think that's realistic? Like, is that what happens when you sell a $50 million apartment? I don't know. That Selling Sunset show. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think you have to have a palette. You probably have to decorate a little bit, but you want it to be general. You want it to look like Big's funeral, like as vague as possible. It'd be like, could I live here? Is this a place I could die?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I do feel like maybe it should be lived in a little bit, but like not specific, because you probably don't want any reminder of the last person that lived there, because then you'll be like, oh no, it's not mine. It's got to be all psychological.
Yeah, that's true.
Who pays for that?
Does the
realtor have like a staging warehouse where they have a bunch of stuff that they can move in?
You're thinking like a businessman.
I wonder because she talked about her movers who like they move Picassos and stuff. Seems like Seema's got a whole operation of this thing.
Yeah.
That's like, yeah, they come in and it's probably part of her fee or something like that, where it's like, you know, I cover this much, but then I get this much of the sale. Like maybe that's like how she does it. I thought that too, though, because she was making a lot of changes and she changed the whole apartment totally. Mm. And then she brought in a new Peloton.
She must have been mega hotshot because she has her own driver. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And her driver lets her smoke in the car.
I mean, if you're a realtor and you're making like 3 to 6%, depending if you're representing the buyer and the seller, Carrie's apartment's going for what? 20 mil, like 20 million probably.
Yeah, I mean, at least between 10 and 20.
So Seema's bringing down $300,000 to $600,000 if she closes that deal. So yeah, you do three or four of those a year. You're doing pretty well.
You're doing well enough to get on OKCupid.
So the conflict between Seema and Carrie were the two insensitivities. Carrie tells Seema she's proud of her for getting out there, and then of course Seema breaks a picture frame that was on Big's bedside table.
Yeah.
And Seema doesn't really feel like it's that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And Carrie gets really, really upset with her.
Yeah.
I think a little emotionally upset. And, you know, they have this conversation about understanding and hurting each other's and being insensitive towards one another. What did you all feel about that?
I thought it was, now that I think back on it, I guess it's not a big deal, but there was part of it where they set them up to be such fast friends really quickly.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a little unrealistic. Again, this is a TV show, so like they need to do stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, one thing that I think is interesting is that in every story, they have taken the three storylines and paired them up with a new person. So it's like Carrie's storylines with Seema, Charlotte's is with LTW, and Miranda's is with Nia Wallace. So they've basically...
also with Che.
And also with Che.
Che is also in there.
And also with Che. That's what they say at an Episcopalian church that Che Diaz goes to. Peace be with you. And also with Che.
And also with Che.
And also with Che. And also with Che.
Is there going to be a monstrous chat and chew with...
With all
six people?
It's just boardroom.
If they just had like... No, they go to the Ace Hotel, whatever the restaurant is there, and they do the big pig roast. And it's just like 17 people around. And they're just like all like 16 people. And they're just like, so tell us more about gender. And they're like, what about race? And then one's like, they're like, what's OK Cupid like? And she's like, it seemed like a good time. I don't yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, what is Seema Indian?
Yeah, Seema's Indian, I believe.
Okay, I just want everyone to know that I did an Italian accent, okay, so that those had no connection to each other.
I believe she's South Asian. I think so.
Okay.
I'm not sure the actresses. Actresses, but
so, yeah, big 16-person chat and chew is on its way. We can only hope.
They have to, right? Because I'm assuming they're going to fold these friendships into the larger group, or maybe not. Or maybe that's like the theme of the show is that there's the central three, and then they splinter off and have their other friends, which is incredibly realistic.
Yeah,
the three of us are very fast friends. We're very close. We hang out and do stuff, but we also have other friends that we don't hang out with all as a big group.
Right,
you do.
No, I don't.
Okay.
No.
What the fuck?
It's just you.
What the fuck? Okay. What about, I feel like one of the most authentic moments of the series so far, when you think about what Sex and the City was Carrie getting mad over a tiny thing that was not a big fucking deal at all.
Yeah, I mean, I always go back on that and say, one, that's very Carrie, and two, her husband just died. So it's like,
I know, but you know that Carrie Bradshaw is going to be a person that's like 16 years in. People are still going to be like, her husband died.
I'm super.
Yeah, but you got to, it's like, it's been what, a week and a half? Like, I agree with that, but I think that,
I don't agree with it. I'm team Carrie here all the way. Dude, she's hiring someone that is bragging about moving Picassos, and she, like...
That is actually true, yeah.
She broke a pic. Like, I'm sorry. She should treat every single thing. And I think Carrie reacted emotionally, but I think she has the right to be upset, especially because that is something that was near and dear to the passing of her husband. So I think Seema, although I don't think Seema should gravel at her feet and beg for an apology, she should have been more delicate with how she handled that personally.
All right. Well, maybe it's just a sign that I've never had been in love and then had that person die.
Or hired movers.
Or hired movers.
Yeah, you've always had your friends.
More realistically.
More realistically. You've never hired movers. That's more what it is.
You poor piece of shit. Oh, man.
Yeah, you would have to just yell at your friend for breaking a picture. That's as far as you could go.
I think an appropriate response would have been not. I think a more realistic response would have been her like maybe crying and Seema being like, "What is it? It was just a picture frame." And Carrie being like, "It's not just a frame. It means this," instead of her attacking Seema so head on. You know, yeah. I think like. I know if I had something like that and that happened, I probably would just be really bummed and quiet and put out rather than attack the person. Yeah. But I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it was, there was a moment in it where the train kept going and Carrie like kept getting madder and madder. And then I was oh, she's one being classic Carrie. But two, I was like, if you were in this moment, like, are you ever in a moment where you're like, have you like ever been mad at someone and then you just know like, you know what? I'm mad and I'm just going to keep my foot on the gas. Like, I'm just like, I understand what's happening. I'm still going to go. That's where I feel like she was at. And, but it's like, you know, like you said, it seems like supposed to be a professional and not have things broken. And it's like, that is a keepsake.
Yeah. And when Seema was like, it was a personal artifact. You should have
that
hit it.
That part I was like, no.
I was like,
listen,
Seema.
No, Seema. Hold listen. No. Listen, we're paying you a bunch. We all know that you got kicked off $1 million listing for this same thing.
Yeah.
Come on.
Not the first time this happened.
Yeah.
I wanna give ample time to discuss Charlotte because that was like one of the most badass Charlotte scenes.
Wait, hold on. Oh no. Oh no, guys! Our numbers are down. Our podcast numbers are down. The alarm just went off. Our fucking numbers are down. Our socials are not rocking with the podcast right now. What the hell is the deal? John, when was the last time you fucking posted? Corey, our socials are down. What
I'm
the
sorry.
Fuck?
I'm sorry.
Listen.
We need, we need to have a meeting about it right now.
This will not stand. We need to get the whole team together. Get Katie in here. Get the, get all 11 other people that are part of our podcast.
We need to,
the
we
fucking
need to,
numbers are down.
We need to strategize about what we can do. Corey, you mentioned that we could live stream our episodes.
I did mention that we could live stream these. Yeah, maybe we,
gotta,
maybe we should do
start,
that.
Yeah, we got to start doing that. Yeah, come on, Carrie. Right, sorry, you got to post in your socials.
That was that was just a, that was so realistic when that happened in the show.
I will say that was one of the most realistic like scenes that won me over for Che. Che kind of had an attitude of like, "What's going on here?" Like, I feel like Che was actually kind of chill like, about it and was just like,
"What the fuck?"
Like Che Shut was up. Like, "Che was." I mean, like Che actually said maybe the most realistic comedian thing they've said so far, where it was like, "Yeah, I mean, I have to do this stuff all the time, you know, for my own stuff." So it was like, "Oh yeah, Che like finally gets it a little bit in their actual character."
Yeah.
I did want to say that, Kevin, earlier you said that you were doing an Italian accent. While that is probably not the best call, Sarita Chowdhury, the actress, was raised in Italy.
Oh, shit.
She's raised in Italy and Mexico, and she's half Indian and half English. And she was in a freaking John Cassavetes movie. She's been in a million movies.
Wait, that's also Logan Roy's wife, I'm pretty sure, right?
In Succession?
In Succession, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's where I recognized her from. No, never mind.
I think you just committed a Charlotte at the dinner party, Kevin.
Okay, I did. Sorry.
Hey, listen, it happens in Sex and the City. We could, and what better intro to talk about Charlotte? She was in the Green Knight, though. She was in the Green Knight. She plays the mother.
That's what I meant.
Knight.
I saw her in the Green Knight.
Yeah, totally.
Dude, that is so funny.
Oh my gosh.
I need to see the Green Knight. I heard it's
some
awesome.
Of my best friends are in Succession and also
and also A24 movies.
And also other movies.
She's been in a million things. Okay, let's talk about Charlotte at the dinner. Guess who's coming to dinner? It's Charlotte. And
it's
Harry.
Charlotte. It's Harry. Nervous Harry.
Nervous Harry. Sweating. Harry. Best Harry line of the thing was, she's like, "You're already sweating." He was like, "I wonder why." Because Charlotte was just giving him the third degree.
That line, and when he said the Zadie Smith line.
That was great.
Dude.
The Zadie Smith line. That's the fucking difference. I'm not like, people want to like this show. And this is like, this was so genuinely funny. And so genuinely not written by just like an old gay white dude that's like, "Let me tell you about race. We got to throw hot water on these trans drag queens, Samantha. That's how we show representation." You know, like, I think that this was just genuinely funny. It wasn't like, like Harry was doing his best, and your best is like a little cringy and it's funny. And he's like, I just thought that was like, that got my first genuine guffaw of the whole series when he said Zadie Smith.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
It was so funny. I loved it.
It was so good. Yeah.
Yeah. That was really good. And then I thought the Charlotte thing, actually, I'm really glad the way when they played the Charlotte thing of her being like, "Oh my gosh, I know your husband," or whatever. And her being like, "I know the woman you're talking about. That's not me." I like that they played that, but I like that it wasn't, again, Miranda like, "But you're the teacher."
Yeah.
I like that they played it and then that they kind of let the rest of the thing play out. And then the later moment where LTW was like, "We were nervous about you being the only white people at the dinner." Like, I think that shows those two characters are so alike, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love that friendship that's happening between the two of them.
I like it. It's definitely the highest fashion friendship, I think, on the show so far. I mean, everyone's clothes are like pretty wild, but like they're always a certain version of like dressed in high fashion.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
Also, I think there's like a tendency that is to me is sad that it's like whenever like a character, and they're doing a good job throughout this series, I think, growing it. That was the point. But sometimes in movies, I mean, that was Jennifer Hudson's problem. There was just like no dimension beyond like,
beyond
just
like
a character or whatever.
That moved here from the South and was like, I love being here. Thank you, Miss Bradshaw.
Yeah. And I thought the truth of this, that it made total sense character wise from like people's deepest human motivations, which is where good writing comes from, would be like a mom that's like, you wasted your money on art. And then Charlotte York, knowing who this character is and writing from being like, she's going to know all of these great black artists. And then, and then the cool thing is where representation, I think, is exciting, is like not just being like, look, we showed a black character. You got to talk about all of these great black artists on a TV show that people are going to go now look up and really are these important names. So I think that was a really cool way to, this is the best version of, I think, what Sex and the City would hope for, is to put Charlotte in a new situation that seems very normal and not just like, not fall into the trap of being like, you know, not all black people look the same. Sometimes this happens to us all the time and it breaks my heart, because the reality that from where I believe that it was written was like, yeah, like we have bigger fish to fry than when white people mix us up with other people. It happens all the time. So it's not a big fucking deal to us. Mm-hmm. That's how I felt that it wasn't like a teaching moment. There was like other stuff to cover, because it's probably that probably happens all the time and you wouldn't ruin a dinner party over it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So totally. I thought it was great. No, I love that. I think it was the best scene in the series so far.
I would watch. I kind of want to rewatch just that scene, because I was just so proud of Charlotte. Like, Charlotte, I think, can sometimes get like not bullied, but be like cowed to not speak up and be timid and kind of like be working in the background. And I like when she stands up and like grabs attention and kind of like steers something. So I was really excited for her. I thought that was super well done. I'm glad that. You know, whenever, and maybe Charlotte's getting revenge on like the bunny type character. I feel like that.
Yeah.
That the mom is like the bunny. True. She's really, you know, showing her.
Ooh,
what's
I didn't even think about a bunny connection.
Yeah.
I guess
The last thing I want to talk about is Stanford.
Yeah.
That was really sad when this was the memory episode of Willie Garson.
Wait, did it say dedicated to?
It did. Yeah.
Wow.
Did it say it?
Right at the end.
At the end of the credits. Yeah.
Yeah. So they dedicated this episode to him. And, you know, I think I'm not sure about this, but he left the show before he passed away, right? It wasn't that he passed away and that's why they had, like, he immediately had to leave because he was sick, I think. Is that correct?
I don't know.
I actually do not know. I saw some articles. Yeah, I just saw at the end there's the In Memory of Willie Garson and then it says Be Kind to Each Other Always.
And so it's, you know, I haven't really processed yet about how I feel about the way they kind of wrote him off the show. Maybe they'll try to like keep communication between him and Carrie just from Japan. Mm-hmm. But obviously that felt a little heavy-handed, obviously, but I think given the circumstances and knowing the real life scenario, it was what it was, and it really sad.
It really sad, but yeah, really sad. And I think that they showed Kevin. You said it last time. Like, there's some things about Stanthony, the relationship. There's about that seem catty, and so this wouldn't come totally out of the blue. It's sad, and it's sad knowing the actual real life circumstances.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, the real life circumstances are like so sad that it takes away from the actual like interesting, funny choice that he is managing like a teenage TikTok star in Japan.
Yeah.
That is such a ridiculous thing. That's actually, I think, a pretty funny choice.
Mm-hmm.
It just is, you know, it's hit so hard over the head. Not hit over the head, but it's just such a glaring reality that it's like they had to do this because, you know, of his unfortunate death.
Yeah.
Well, what I would hope is that, and I do think this, we're on a we're on a journey of a season, and so sometimes things feel unsatisfactory storytelling wise when really I think they know what they're doing. And I do wonder if it's whether it's a letter or whether it's like a voiceover or some way. I think there's going to be more resolution to Stanford's character than that. But but yeah, it was so sad because I think it was a shock to everyone when Willie died.
Yeah,
even his closest friends. So
yeah. Do you think? I have a question for you all about just the way the series is shaping up. Like, we've said that they're setting tables. There's, like, traps laid that are, like, you know, they're going to deal with Miranda's drinking at some point. There are budding female friendships. Now we're learning even more about these characters who at first seem like, you know, maybe side characters who are becoming, like, more central characters. And I think Seema is going to be one of them. Do you think that TV writing has changed? It has changed, but do you think that because of the way TV writing has changed, it's going to completely change the way that this show plays out? Because to me, it seems like we used to get a season arc, but I feel like we would get more concise episodes of like this story, this story, this story. And it doesn't feel like we've gotten that as much. We've gotten it, but it feels a little more like, I don't know where this is going, but I think we're going to get more of a, it's like more focused on the overall season. And I feel like Sex and the City felt a little more sitcom as opposed to this show.
Yeah.
I felt like this episode was the first one of this series that we got that was both. It was full season and it was full series. Full season and full episode.
At the end of the show, is really, Katie was like, man, I actually missed the voiceover.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like an interesting thing for her to say. But sorry, Kevin, what were you saying?
No, I was just going to say, I feel like that's the influence on, miniseries and on, just the growth of length of episodes that just changes like the different devices you have to use to just get through 22 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you take those away and you can, just like the stories have grown more emotionally and there's like a little more depth to them. There's also certain things that, you know, it's the same way that it's like you could have the greatest writers, the greatest performers. And if you're doing three cameras with a laugh track, it's not going to hit like Seinfeld hit. It's it's not going to hit the way Friends hit or like even I Love Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like, you can't really go back to that. And so I think they're kind of embracing with the camera work, they're embracing like the cinematic type filming it looks more like a movie and it's stretched out. But
Carrie hasn't floated away yet. She hasn't flown.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to get floating away.
I'm a little bummed.
Listen, I'm not saying this to be vulgar. I'm saying it because this is some of these ladies need to come, okay?
Well, I did think like, about this. I did think about, yeah, I
these ladies are all in tough spots and they need to get off.
I mean, no,
to,
I
they,
I,
need to, they need to introduce a new character, freaking Dr. Jackhammer, who just one by one
he just shows up at their houses.
Huh.
Yeah, just I mean, like, I did think
be like, oh, you're an alcoholic and you're stressed at school. Your husband just died. You're in a happy marriage, but you want to go back and relive your days of the rabbit. Ladies, Dr. Jackhammer's here.
Hello. Nice to meet you, Dr. Jackhammer.
Are you ready for your appointment today? Thank you.
It's just Mads Mikkelsen coming in. It's Mads Mikkelsen. He's like kind of an older man, but incredibly sexy. Yes, I'm Dr. Jackhammer.
But unfortunately, that's man. We went a long time doing our landmine dance up top. That we unfortunately got to come to an end.
I think we covered a lot of ground.
There was a lot to cover in that episode. It was a great episode.
There was a whole lot to cover.
We need to do our Cosmo rating.
Yeah. Ready?
I have a question about this. Are we taking all Sex and the City canon into consideration or just like that episodes
for the ratings?
Yeah. I need someone to answer that.
I kind of feel like we should just take these episodes, because I thought about this when we were watching it, and there are things that I get frustrated at, and then I remember this is an entirely different show. It's in the same universe, but they I heard Michael Patrick King also say that he was like, the decision to not have Samantha in the show is like, the decision was not to not have Samantha. Samantha is in the show. It's just that she's in London. And he's like, but we knew that Kim Cattrall wasn't going to be in the show because she didn't want to. So he's like, it's this universe. And of course, she's always part of this universe. So I think it's a whole different deal.
Okay. I'm my rating then.
Mm, okay. That does actually change things. Oh, wow.
Do you remember what I gave the first episode?
It should have been a five.
It should have been a five. You gave it a four
legendary.
Something.
Legendary.
Did you give it a three something?
I don't know.
No.
Some dickhead rating, and I mean that's because you had a dildo strapped to your head.
That's true.
Literally. Dude, Dr. Jackhammer.
Dr. Jackhammer.
Mr. Big Don.
You could play Dr. Jackhammer. Just show up with a dildo on your head.
Dr. Jackhammer.
Dude, I'm Dr. Jackhammer.
I give this episode a 4.0. I really had fun watching it. I loved all the stories. I was engaged and entertained the whole time. Watching Charlotte just like list off all those art pieces, something that she's really good at. I'm interested in Seema. We had a little Carrie emotional breakdown. Miranda and Naya felt really good for Miranda to not just be like a bumbling Miranda. So I love this episode. I'd watch it again. Really liked it. 4.0.
I'll give it a 4.0. My rating changed when we're saying we're rating the whole series. I thought 100%. It was clearly the best of the entire series. I thought it was cool to, I forgot who wrote the last one, but this one, like Kevin said, was written by Kelly Goff. Also Samantha Irby, who's a writer on it. She, I think, wrote the heavily influenced the first Nia Wallace Miranda scene. And it wouldn't surprise me if she helped, you know, like, because it's all written in a writer's room, so it's like, I wonder if she dealt with some of the uncomfortable things at the dinner party scene. And I felt like this was played, it was just so much like more realistic and fun to watch. And it's just cool to see other writers' touches on it, but I 4.0, strongest of the, even though I gave the first one a five, this one, very solid episode. Very great to see a Charlotte power moment. Yeah, totally.
I give it a 4.0 as well.
Heck yeah.
Dude, we just
Megatroned.
I really was prepping for... I told you guys before we started, I was like, I really don't have a lot of things to pick on with this episode because I just thought it was so wonderfully executed. And when they announced that Kelly Goff was going to be part of the writing team, I used to listen to her on Left, Right, Center, just like a political podcast. And I think it's really an inspiring thing to, like, I was like, you can just be a screenwriter from being a political commentator. And I would encourage everyone to go, like, look at her website and look at her, follow her on social media and stuff, because she basically, like, left her dream of being, like, a political writer to be a screenwriter. And those are two different professions. And I don't know. I just feel like this had easily the best writing in the series. And then I also saw this. She just posted this on Facebook that is public. But she said, I want to thank Michael Patrick King for this story's journey. He tirelessly supported my dream of writing an episode of television that reflected the contributions of black artists. So it must have been a dream of hers for a long time. And then it says, the day we hung one of the Gordon Parks' most important photographs from the civil rights era on set was one of the proudest moments of my career. And I'm like, man, that's like so cool to maybe as a writer have this thought in your head of like, I wonder if one day like I could do this. And then it ends up in the show that you used to watch when you were in high school. Like, I just think that this is every bit of the culmination of like, them wanting to be more diverse, but also writing at the top of their capabilities from like a young, new, talented writer. And I don't know. I'm very inspired by that. And I think everybody should be. And congrats to Kelly Goff on a wonderful episode. And I'm excited. It makes me more excited for all of the different side characters, including Che Diaz in the show, to see maybe now that we're past the initial part, like where these stories go. So I'm over the moon.
It is a very interesting writing staff, and that, like, Samantha Irby also, who I was saying, like, she is a comedian and writes books, but I don't know if she was, like, started as a screenwriter. So it's like, they have some interesting other writers, which is great. It's
amazing.
Definitely like that's awesome. That's awesome that was like her dream to make that happen, and it did.
Yeah, that's really cool. Thanks for sharing that, Kevin. That's awesome. And thank you everyone for listening. If you haven't already, please toss up a rating on iTunes
or
go head on over to Spotify.
You
Spotify
can rate us on Spotify now. We got
46 so far.
Got 46 5-star ratings on Spotify, and we are always taking more, people. And you know where else we're taking more? We're taking more on our Patreon. Come on over there. We just posted an episode about going to Candice Brusnell's one-woman show, which unfortunately has ended its run. So if you want to know a little bit of what it was like, you can hear us talk about it there.
Yeah.
Just let the Bradshaw Boys take you through culture and theater. That's what we're saying.
Let's just mansplain her show.
Let's just mansplain her show. We're mansplaining everything else.
That's on the Patreon.
Yep. Oh, shit. Oh, crap. We got to go get our numbers up. Oh, shit. Our podcast numbers are...
Everyone, oh, my gosh. Everyone, man your socials. Post.
Man your socials. Get to your post.
All right. Later, taters.
Later, taters.
Later, taters.
The Bradshaw Boys stars Corey Cavan, John Sieber, and Kevin James Doyle. The show is produced by Jeremy L. Balin. For more information on the guys, check out their website at bradshawboys.com, on social media at The Bradshaw Boys, and if you see them in the street, tip your glass. Thanks for listening.